This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Morning, kia ora, and welcome to Free Left In, a left-wing perspective here on 89.0 Free FM. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
Yeah.
And we've still got, our colleague is still sick.
Still under the weather, eh?
Yeah, got a message from him saying he was still struggling, so but hopefully he'll be coming right soon. But I say it's quite a nasty, if it is the flu, you get quite a niggly cough, and I've still got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, there goes Mick and his vaccine. So it doesn't protect you from getting the flu vaccine.
Yeah.
It just tends to, what do you call it?
Offset the worst effects.
Yeah,
the word.
So I hope he comes right.
Yeah. Get well later. Get well soon, Mick. So I've got colleagues who've had it, and it lingers in different ways. Like yours is a cough. One colleague's a snotty nose stuff.
Just got sort of a bit of phlegm in the chest. And
I haven't, touch wood.
You haven't had it?
No, I haven't had it, yeah. And
Nor's Margaret? No one in the family?
No, nobody in the family. Yeah. I think Nicola may have had something up in Auckland.
Okay.
But that's about it.
Yeah. My daughter thought she was coming down for it, but ended up not. But, there's certainly a lot of sickness around.
So and it has impacted on a lot of things. Like there was we do an Oscar program at after school part of it. There was a message that came through that a number of students were away from school. I think they were talking about Tarapa, and I think it sort of coincided with a cross country event.
Yeah,
and then they weren't dodging it. The people just sounded unwell. Yeah.
Well, and let's face it, anywhere where there's lots of people together,
mm-hmm.
in housing or in schools or hospitals, there's a lot of bugs flying around.
Even in my job, there's a lot.
Okay.
But just haven't caught it or been just. Fortunate, as I said before, touch wood.
And that can happen. Yeah.
But yeah. As you said.
But you've had the vaccine, which is.
Okay. Protects you from that stuff.
Okay.
Okay, so
I've got so one bit of good news.
Yeah, go with it.
Well, I wouldn't say it's good news. It's bittersweet. The tragedy in Nepal and China with the ice glacier breakaway and the just wipe out of thousands of homes and people. But there were two rescued yesterday.
Yeah.
Two hydroelectric tunnel workers, which was sort of, 8 days being in I suppose it's their summer, but you're in complete darkness. Mm. It's sort of a bit of it's bittersweet because, of course, lots still haven't been found.
Yeah.
And lots have died to pull two people out, what a miracle! Yeah,
it was on the news yesterday, and I watch the news when I feel like I watch it.
Yeah,
and they set down this group into a tunnel, and they said one of the first things they said, there's a body part there.
Yeah,
but then they use a drone to see what's further on. Yeah, and they checked a shaft up went up there, and then there was nobody there.
It's quite, you know, it just shows you the sheer force of this, what I'd call a torrent of ice and water and mud and boulders. They said that a lot of the victims are found and their clothes have all been shredded off them. And yeah. and limbs missing, etc.
Yeah, because the power of it.
Just the power of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so, yeah, dreadful tragedy today. One thing I was a little bit disappointed, well, I was disappointed, when it first happened, there was quite a lot of what I call negative publicity coming out of the West, anti-China stuff.
Yeah.
Going, oh, China isn't reporting it properly and da-da-da and all that. Well, communication is very poor. China's never dodged from doing it. And who's supplying a lot of the aid into that area?
It's a lot of Chinese.
So I thought that was just typical Chinese bashing, you know?
Yeah, they got in there fairly quickly.
When there was a tragedy going on.
And there were areas that they did say that they're so remote, it took them days to get to them.
Oh, yeah, and you try and go walk through... You know, the only thing you could probably put into what would be sort of a thing, you try walking across a mud flat in an estuary at low tide.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you imagine, and you could see the exhaustion on the rescue teams and all that. We're trying to, while that mud is wet, you just sink up to your waist.
Yeah, I think they tried that as a training mechanism for the Auckland rugby team.
I remember that. But it just shows you the exhaustion.
Yeah.
When you're just doing it as a run or All Black, you know, prima donna stuff,
yeah.
you know, they can come out and have a hot shower and look in the mirror. But these guys are doing it, trying to rescue people, they'd be exhausted.
You know? And you have to also admit, this is quite up and down country, it's way up, you know, as I say, and it's way down.
Yeah.
And communications like roads, bridges, and stuff like that have all been wiped out.
Well, the first things to go. And everyone, you know, where's the flat, what flatland there is on down by the river.
Yeah, and that's it.
And of course, everyone got, you know, they don't have a lot of tracks going up the hills, you know.
Yeah. So China, I think China, and then I think there's a lot of aid from India.
Yeah, those countries in that area. And they said also the other thing is because of the confines of the access and everything else, you can't just get lots of teams in and everything else because there's only a metal road that they had to, Chinese had to rebuild one into Port Geurong, you know, had to reinstitute it to get access in there.
So logistical nightmare. To be frank, they're talking about the cost is billions, and I suspect that disasters of this type, in particular in areas like this, will become commonplace. And holding your hand out for UN aid is going to be a little bit of a problem because where's all that money going to come from?
Well, and I did see that 90% of Nepal's electricity, and with the report I was reading that this morning, comes from hydro water, out of this, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, and hence why there's 1,000 hydro workers still missing, you know. So the area was full of tunnels and electricity projects, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them have been wrecked probably beyond recognition here.
Just the size of
them.
Your heart goes out to them, all right.
Yeah. Poor, one joke was very distraught. I think he lost a couple of his relations, and he fears going back to the town because there won't be anybody there that he comes from.
Well, I say the housing was a lot of it's just devastated or whatever. Very sad. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how much aid we have provided
offered something because New Zealand has reasonably close contacts with Nepal, especially.
The Hillary thing, yeah.
Yeah, over that.
So. And I think one of the spokesperson from there must have been a grandson, Alexander.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Alexander Hillary, and he talked about it's quite.
Yeah.
So. A daunting event.
Yeah.
There was that story from the 1960s about the earthquake, one of the most powerful ones that ever occurred. It was one of them anyway, in Alaska. And you're talking about waves created by something like that. There were the massive waves created by I think it was on the coast of Alaska where glaciers collapsed into the sea and that caused big water surges.
I see that, with Nepal and China, that area has had there's been other tragedies there too with similar types of things of, of glaciers giving way, etc. Yeah. But this is sort of them to date, the mother of
all of them. Yeah.
All of them. Yeah. So very tragic. Yeah.
I think you expect them to become more and more commonplace.
Well, they, unfortunately, you know, we've got to look at the. You've got frozen soil and rocks and mud, you know, and that, of course, and it's frozen forever. But what happens as it thaws out?
Yeah, and then there was a fracture in the granite, I think they said, wasn't it? The whole thing just came.
And water does force its way, you know.
Yeah, it does. That's how you get cracks in rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look crack in a rock, water gets in, it freezes, and it's.
Yeah.
It's a natural process. Yeah.
Anyway, that's one.
I found an interesting article, and it was to do with an event that happened in 1960.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Just going over there. The Sharpeville Massacre.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, that's when...
South Africa,
when a peaceful protest was fired upon by armed police. And we're talking about apartheid era South Africa.
Yeah.
And what's happened is, it says here, Sharpeville Massacre victims filed class action lawsuit in South Africa. And I'll just be reading from this verbatim.
Yeah.
More than six decades after South African apartheid police opened fire on an unarmed crowd protesting pass laws in Sharpeville, a suburb or township south of Johannesburg, survivors and relatives of the victims announced on Thursday local time that they would launch a class action lawsuit against the government.
Okay.
At a media briefing held in Sharpeville, lawyers said the case seeks compensation and asks for a court to strike down the 1961 Indemnity Act, which they say prevented victims from pursuing claims arising from the massacre and remains in force today. The Indemnity Acts protected the instigators of the massacre.
Yeah. Yeah. The government, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Police shot at an unarmed crowd protesting apartheid pass laws on the 21st of March 1960 and drew international condemnation. Apartheid-era police records put the toll as 69 dead and 180 injured, while research cites the plaintiffs says at least 91 people were killed and more than 238 were wounded. The massacre became a defining moment in the struggle against apartheid, with March the 21st now observed in South Africa as Human Rights Day, a public holiday.
Okay.
Before Thursday's announcement, family members of victims retraced the protesters' route in a silent walk of protest. Abraham Mofokeng, 87, was 20 when he was shot in the foot and back as he fled the gunfire. A bullet remains. He's one of the survivors.
Yeah.
A bullet remains in his back. It's not possible to forget what happened in 1960, Mofokeng said. I cannot go a day without thinking about how we have been affected. Mofokeng is one of three Sharpeville residents acting as representative plaintiffs for a wider group in the case brought by lawyers for human rights. The others were Pauline, Matt Hine and Ishmael Poho, who both lost their fathers in the massacre. And there's a photo here taken from 73 in New Zealand. And it was Mike Treen, whose name always crops up on the left-wing stuff.
Mike,
Mike Treen at the Sharpeville Day protest in March 1973, organised by students at Auckland University in opposition to the planned Springbok tour.
Yeah.
I think they were supposed to go to South Africa in 73, or they were supposed to come here, one or the other.
Yeah.
More than 70 survivors and relatives have expressed support for or interest in joining the litigation. The government had not yet responded to queries by the time of publication. Why victims could not sue, and we talked about that, the Indemnity Act protected the instigators, and I think less than 4% of claimants got something out of it, or some form of discrimination.
Yeah. No, this is very similar to the indemnity that the IDF get and Israeli forces against alleged abuses in jail and in the field of conflict.
It says a lot, eh?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I don't think it ever got raised in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission process. or much of a mention, because only 51 survivors were formally awarded reparations.
Yeah.
I found that interesting. And the reason why I found it interesting was that we have a current All Black tour to South Africa.
Yep, we do.
In May 1960, the All Black, and this is 2 months after that,
yeah,
the All Blacks toured the country.
Okay, yeah.
And there was significant protesting here about, because one of the issues was that the New Zealand Rugby Union had to comply with the South Africans' apartheid-era all-white policy that excluded Maori players from being part of that tour.
Yeah.
And the protests were saying, no Maori, no tour.
Okay.
But they went ahead because it was a Labour government at the time, which was quite surprising.
Yeah.
But I think that particular government, the Nash government, was on the back foot over something else, and they just.
And don't forget, 1960s. You're very much into New Zealanders are very much into rugby racing.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah,
The Māori Renaissance and the Māori was still bubbling away, but it hadn't really got.
Got its
strength together.
So that's why I brought that up because the massacre brought condemnation, and then we followed that up by sending our team there in light of that condemnation.
Yeah,
it still reminds us of the 1976 tour when it was all go, and there was huge opposition. Called Condemnation of New Zealand, particularly by Black African nations at the time. The other thing was that the Prime Minister of South Africa was a person called Hendrik Verwoerd.
Okay.
And he was probably one of the more harder drivers of the apartheid stuff.
Yeah.
Him and his forebearer, his predecessor. And he actually was... there was an attempted assassination on him just after this massacre, but I don't think it was linked to the massacre.
Okay,
it was to do with something else because the would-be assassin was a white British-born farmer.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He was eventually assassinated.
Okay,
in 1966. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I found that one particularly. Just something that I'd heard about, the Sharpeville massacre. You heard the story about it, but there were other factors in it as well. And good on the survivors for trying to seek some form of reparations after all these years.
And you'd mentioned it before about the talks they had about reconciliation and that. And I still think that was a really good way, and I've heard a good way of trying to bring some resolution and some calmness about it, rather than you're wrong, we're right. They wanted the victims wanted the victimizers to know how they felt and how they were treated.
Yeah, there was also an interesting story because I looked up Verwoerd himself and his widow. And his widow was still alive when Mandela was prime minister or president.
Okay.
And Vendetta actually visited her because she was well known for her hospitality.
Yeah.
As a type of part of that sort of reconciliation type stuff.
Yeah.
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 She was Danish by birth.
Yeah.
Apparently.
And that's when it's too early. That's the thing is how do it's like the Russia Ukraine thing, the Israeli Palestine thing is how do you get these people to. How do you end it peacefully and with hope, and you either just shut yourself off, and that's what when you put up this game, I thought I was watching the game and the jets going, the airplanes going past and but in the stands but there was very mixed. There weren't just all white people sitting in a row, and there weren't just all black people, and there may have been areas like that, but it didn't look like it. There were just people enjoying the game, and South Africa's come a long way, and it'll be lovely. You imagine a bunch of Israelis sitting on intermingled with a bunch of Palestinians watching something. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't happen at this stage in history.
It won't happen in that country. It would happen in other places where Yeah.
So it just shows you it can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But over how many years? How many? It
takes a long time.
It takes a long time to break things down and prejudices, etc. And some didn't. Let's face it. There was what do you call it when people leave a country? They migrate, left the country, and they moved to Australia and place New Zealand because they couldn't handle the integration of the indigenous black tribes, etc., around the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And hopefully they haven't brought that racism with them.
That's what you hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, like, coming to, especially to New Zealand, etc., coming here, and I know some, what I call new New Zealanders that are South African origins, and they still, you can tell there's still a little bit of prejudice there, but they like New Zealand. And I think that, you know, having a treaty and having equal rights and all that, I think they go, well, it can work, yeah.
Yeah, it
goes back to inequality. Australia, South Africa's still got massive problems with things, but it stems, okay, racism from the older part of days, but also from inequality.
Yeah. There's inequality between tribes in South Africa too.
Oh, of course, internally tribes, you know.
Yeah.
You know, inequality isn't just a white man thing. It can happen all.
You get
educated and you get opportunities, or you make opportunities. Suddenly you're doing all right, you know, and you're part of your tribe's not, you know. We see that every day.
Yeah. Another interesting event was it happened in this country. It was to do with an apology, Fred.
Okay.
You would have heard the matter around the wind energy payment.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it impacted on yourself, but I received letters on behalf of clients at work that were.
Yeah.
And Upson kind of apologised over that whole issue. Not everybody was impacted with their New Zealand, with those who were on New Zealand Super weren't getting the wind energy payment, because I think it was linked to a confirming your circumstances, which could potentially affect somebody like Mick. He may have got a letter saying...
I think he did. I didn't get one. I got a circumstances one, which I was quite surprised at, because I've never had one. And I've been a pensioner for a little while. But and apparently they just did a broad one. But I would have thought, okay, we'll just keep paying the winter energy payment, and we can always take it back of anyone who isn't actually entitled to it as we go through it. But no, what they did is they cut some off,
and
because they didn't get back in time with their letters of change of their circumstances.
Yeah, and some people have various reasons why they're technophobes. They're relying on somebody else to do it for them, and stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I'm putting my hand up all the time. I'm totally reliant on my children to keep my phone going, keep the glitches out of my computer. You know, I'm very grateful to them because I don't know how to do it. I'm not interested. You know. I push the button and basically hope it works. Yeah,
but there was another matter with benefits as well.
Yeah.
And it took the minister 19 days to say apologise for that.
Yeah.
Her hand was forced.
Yeah.
Yeah. It goes to some, what they call it here, a time of the 19 days it took for the minister to say sorry for extremely unsatisfactory benefit cuts.
And it's not a good look when the minister's looking like this posh lady with big rings on her finger, etc., and she's been, you know, got involved in this on how much she was claiming for her house that she owned down in Wellington or whatever. And might have, legally she's fine. It wasn't, you know, but the morality of it is not a good look when you don't want, you know, someone saying, come on, you need to buck your ideas up. But if they think you're one of you, they'll wear it. But when they're all glittered up and glammed up, they say, come on, well, you don't deserve that $20 a week and you're sitting on your fortune.
Yeah, that's like the Christine Rankin argument.
Yeah, you got to, you know, it's not people don't like that. And I know Tories who don't like that sort of thing too. You know, so it's
this is the event. And Luxon said on Friday. So Friday would have been Friday adjacent to the day of this article, which is the second. I think it was about the Friday 30th, I think it was. 30th or something like that. Well, I might be wrong. Sorry. Said on Friday he would obviously apologise for the error, which left a... this is what the issue was, which left a number of beneficiaries underpaid after MSD was overwhelmed by change to legislation.
Yeah.
The law change made last year introduced a requirement for people on some benefits to reconfirm their circumstances at least every 52 weeks. That was the matter. And then MSD got overwhelmed. Part of the argument I would feel why they got overwhelmed is because a lot of staff got cut. Like their backroom staff got...
How many beneficiaries... How many pensioners are there? Yeah, stacks of them.
Yeah, and these weren't just pensioners.
All beneficiaries.
Beneficiaries. Those confirming your circumstances really applies to those that get... supplementary assistance, like temporary additional support accommodation supplement, disability allowance. Not everybody gets one.
No, but what sort of percentage of the population is getting some sort of assistance from the state?
Quite a bit.
Pensioners, working for families, unemployed, sickness beneficiary, supported living, disabled people. There'll be also some working people getting supplemented because they don't earn enough. It's a huge number of people that get something from the state, which I agree with. But I don't think they realise that you send this out.
Yeah.
And go back to my argument. Send it out. And I'm all for it. It's taxpayer money.
You have to have
accountability for it.
But
they should have gone it the other way and said, right, we'll keep paying everything, but when it comes in, if there is a discrepancy, we will pick it up.
Yeah, so it all started on August the 13th.
Yeah.
So Upston was briefed on two separate issues that arose after last year's law change. The wind energy payment, which you mentioned. The other was the operational issue where MSD was unable to keep up with the response of people confirming their circumstances. Okay, so people would argue that why would you go through staff cutting, trimming the public service. Yep.
Yeah.
And it took her until... It took her to the 18th of August to reply to apologise about the wind energy stuff. But she had to apologise on... just trying to find the right time. September the 1st at 2:11. Upston apologises during question time in Parliament. I acknowledge that a number of beneficiaries have had their benefits... payments affected since the Mandatory Review Act came into force, and I apologise to those affected.
But has she really realised? And I'm fortunate that I'm not critically reliant on my pension each week.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are, it's a huge stress. You're $30 short, and you've already committed to that. How do you get around that when you've got no money? And no money until next fortnight's pension. You know,
I've seen
you would have dealt that with clients if I was them, I would have done it the other way around.
Yeah, so she goes on, some benefits had been wrongly suspended. What we don't know at this stage is how many. The situation is extremely unsatisfactory.
Yeah.
But see, it's been created by a law change.
Yeah.
And who initiated the law change? Government.
Yeah. It would have been the coalition government, did they?
It was done last year.
Yeah, as I say, I'm all for the accountability, but they should have just said, all right, we'll keep paying. If we pick anyone up on change of circumstances, we will, if they owe us money, we'll take it back at $5 a week, you know?
Yeah, listen to this. On the 1st of September at 3:07 p.m., Upston repeats her apology during an urgent debate on the matter called by Green MP Ricardo Mendez March. Mm. I've apologised on multiple occasions, she said. She also addressed her comments from the August the 25th, saying they weren't misleading because the question she was asking was about policy. I was asked, were main benefits wrongly suspended as a result of my policy? The answer is no. That is correct. The suspensions were not a result of my policy. They were a result of the processing delays, which is an operational matter for MSD, she said. But didn't MSD have staff cutting?
And I'm sure the MSD would have, their managers would have said, we're not coping with the amount of work we've got, you know.
Yeah, so their staff were cut. We know that. They call them backroom staff. The backroom staff are quite important for MSD because they do a lot of the processing stuff.
Yeah.
So that's where I feel that, you could blame MSD, but I think you could also blame ideology.
Ideology is behind it.
Yeah.
That it's a punt. You've been, should be grateful for your pension, and we should be in a holistic thing that we've got a state that still believes in social welfare and the holistic good of all.
Mm-hmm.
But ideology is, well, they don't really deserve it apart from me. So, and that's what I find the irony. The MP gets up and they're entitled to their perks on their housing and their accommodation and their flights and their when they leave.
Yeah.
But like, someone who's a beneficiary, well, no, I'm not sure they're doing it right. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that comes to what we talked about within that space, civil servants, basically. But it looks like the civil servants are going to go on strike.
Oh, right, the PSNA?
Yeah, PSA. Yeah. And it says here, and Luxon doesn't care if they go on strike. They're still going to cut numbers anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... Yeah.
And all you do is they try and cut numbers and all that and be more efficient. All it does is create delays.
Yeah.
Because who gets... It's not the manager, you don't know what they do, gets fired. It's actually the clerk that's got to keep the files in order in the bottom room, or something like that. And so it takes longer to access something.
They'll say, but we will replace that with AI.
With technology,
So that basically equals inefficiency, job cuts.
Yeah.
Equals inefficiency. Interesting,
You keep going. I saw something which relates to that.
Yeah. So I think that the strike's been planned for when? Soon, anyway. But you just thought that it was... Luxon was rather arrogant in his dismissal of the strike, and he just basically said, I don't really care.
He's in that key, following the key footsteps.
So that's coming up. So kind of sort of jolted my memory about that this week was when he came past the PSA's offices in town. You people are going to go on strike, aren't you? Yeah.
Can I just read it's a letter of the week. It's in today's Herald, I'll read it verbatim.
Yeah.
Fairer taxes for all. The National Party's mantra of no new taxes designed to scare voters. What should truly scare New Zealanders is our collapsing health system, our crumbling infrastructure and rising poverty.
Yeah.
Is this the New Zealand we want our children and grandchildren to inherit? National's fixation with no new taxes is irresponsible and kicks vital problems down the road. New Zealand desperately needs investment in essential services. Taxes are a collective investment by all citizens, but our current system is unfair. Treasury reports that 40% of the super wealthy in New Zealand pay an effective rate of just 9% on economic income due to untaxed capital gains. Contrast that with regular employees in New Zealand who pay an effective tax rate of 20% to 29%. A capital gains tax as proposed by Labor is a long overdue start. We must look at how every citizen contributes proportionally to their wealth. It is no accident that the Scandinavian countries which have high top tax rates, averaging close to 60%, consistently rank as the happiest countries in the world. A fair society ultimately benefits everyone. No new taxes smacks of desperate electioneering. A more honest, forward-thinking slogan for our country's future would be fairer taxes for all. I thought that's a very good letter.
Yeah. There was that fuel argument, wasn't there, a fuel tax thing?
But if we want things, someone's got to pay for it.
And
everyone sort of, but we want it, but we don't really want to pay for it, And then that sets everything off.
Yeah, that's the national message. No new taxes. And even old Mayor Brown from Auckland was highly miffed when they booted the beard tax into touch.
Yeah. And should really, that we should be, our politicians, and it's not popular, taxes aren't popular just by decree and all that. But, okay, you know, and I have to give the credit to the leader of the party. At least she's saying, well, if we want things, we have to have some taxation.
Mm.
You know, so that, and the Greens say that as well.
Yeah.
And the thing, but that's where we need, well, our politicians to go, okay, yep, we need a top, our health service needs to be top ranked. But to do that, it's going to cost.
Yeah.
So instead of our tax rates will have to be higher. You know, if you want good social security net, we need more taxation to pay for it. You know?
Yeah, and that person brought it, crumbling hospitals, schools, infrastructure, da-da-da-da.
Yeah, that's just it. But we don't, it's seen by a lot as a poison chalice that we can't mention pensioners, pensions and people still working, there's lots of subjects. We don't talk about capital gains, we don't talk about death duties, we don't talk about wealth, basically.
Yeah,
we stay away from wealth because everyone works hard for their money is the
mantra
is the mantra and the myth that gets perpetuated. But it's refreshing when a politician puts their head above the parapet and goes, well, actually, if we want things, someone's going to have to pay for it.
Yeah, but these clowns, what we call the National Party.
Well, they're comfortably off.
They're comfortably off.
So they don't have that issue because they've got their private medical insurance if they need it. They've got their batch at the beach.
So on.
They're not affected by a lot of the stuff.
Yeah, but they're not. They're unwilling.
They live in a suburb where the doctor's accessible. You know, off it goes.
They're unwilling to support a fair society.
That seems to be it. They want a fair society for their grandchildren, but not necessarily Benny and Maddie's.
Yeah, I know.
And I say, until we get in our psyche that it's, if everyone's grandchild is doing all right, then we have a better society.
Yeah. But we haven't.
Mm.
Yeah, so, and you've harped on about this before, Fred.
I do harp on about
the taxes, what people should understand what we use the tax take for.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to be that message doesn't seem to be getting through to the people that need to know what that's about.
Well, and we get caught up in this word free, which is in one way a tragedy that we use it. We say, oh, it's free to children under five. It should be under children parents don't have to pay for their children under whatever age because it is paid for by we the people. That sort of thing is not explained. And people think, oh, surely people know that. No, they don't.
You'll get that.
You go, pay, oh, my doctor only cost me $18 or $10.
Mm-hmm.
I go, what about what the state gives the doc pays the doctor? What?
Yeah.
They don't know, you know?
Yeah, and the welfare system.
Yeah.
That's a classic one.
That's a classic one,
That is definitely from your tax take. It's not this thing about, oh, I'm entitled to that money. No, it's from the tax take.
So, it just needs to be, and to say, if the Scandinavians can, and they have arguments about it, et cetera.
Yeah.
And there's still some very wealthy people. This is what I think the other myth is, oh, we can't have higher taxes because people will be poor. Actually, Scandinavia's got a lot of really rich people. So don't think that hasn't. It's just that it has a more of a nanny state. Would we call it a nanny state? It just has a caring state. So, yeah, you don't have to worry about where you're going to be when you're old.
Yep.
You don't have to worry about your education for your children. And you don't have to worry about it if you get sick. Surely that's the basic core of it. You know, you got food and shelter, you know?
Yeah. We need to have that tax debate.
Yeah, and wealth. Not just tax, wealth. Because, say, often people goes, well, look at that, you know, that person's got a huge wealth. But their income tax, because they bought another farm or another three rentals, they're not paying much tax.
Yeah,
you know. So and hopefully, and that's what I say. I give a heads up to the Opportunity Party. At least they want to have that discussion. You know.
Yeah.
And the Greens do too. You know. And Labor sort of does. Yeah.
Yeah, but that. Yeah, I there was an interesting Facebook posting by Dave McPherson, and it revolved around.
That's ex-councillor from Hamilton.
Yeah, and he's down Dunedin now. It revolves around Labor's slogan, better starts now.
Okay.
So what does that actually mean?
Mm.
Is there, and
It would have been better to have fairer starts now.
Yeah, fairer starts now. But better starts now. It doesn't sort of ring, you know, all those bells and whistles that people get with these fancy slogans. It didn't ring that. It kind of left one with that cringe factor.
Yeah.
And I know that's, and I'm not a fan of it.
Everyone's got to have a slogan, and
I think the choice of words is not right.
Doesn't grab you.
Yeah. What Dave McPherson had said, it'll be one slogan that I won't be using.
Mm.
I think he's still tied up with the Labour Party down there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, it's sort of go back to the population. 10% are wealthy.
Yeah.
Another 30% are doing quite nicely. Thank you very much.
That's Jack. Yeah.
You know. So that's and there's the rest of various stages. You know. So yeah, what are you talking about to someone who says, "Oh, well, I've sold good now, better." What does that mean? Better?
Yeah,
it's already better, you know?
I kind of changed it, and it's sort of related to eating too many onions.
But they've got to come up with something.
But I don't know if that was what I would go with. It was a bit like...
Have they all got their what do they call their campaign slogan out yet?
Well, you know what Nationals is, eh?
What's theirs? More infrastructure.
Fixing the basics, building a better future, and
for the few, or did they put for the many?
No, they left that line out.
I put
that one for our rich mates was what I put in there. So,
and what's ACT?
Well, I could
look after yourself if you're all right. Yeah.
I think it's a family show, so I can't say.
Okay.
And I don't know what New Zealand First is, but I think maybe are we back on track yet?
Yeah.
Because they came up with that stupid track one in the last election round. I'm thinking when I look at the national slogans for this time and last time, they're saying back on track. But if you would need to build the basics to get on back on track, wouldn't you? So they got their slogans around the wrong way.
Yeah.
Cart before the horse stuff.
We will see. I have to have a look at them and come up with some smart comments.
You have to. Like changing a national billboard or saying something like that.
I've got a couple.
Yeah, you go for it, Fred.
Two things. First of all, do Germany. And I think it's quite a big, we'll have repercussions around Europe.
Mm-hmm.
They have their provincial elections.
Yep.
A bit like state elections in America now. And there's one coming up in Saxony-Anhalt,
mm-hmm.
Which is in part of what was former Eastern Germany, etc.
Yep.
And is it tomorrow or might be Monday our time? And they've got a state elections.
Yeah.
It's only a small province, so it's 2 to 3 million people.
Oh, yep.
But AfD, Alternative for Germany, is leading all the polls, and they're thinking they might get to govern, govern direct. As the majority,
and that,
which will be a major shock for Germany, because it's it's a right wing party,
mm-hmm.
Very what do you call it, anti migrant or et cetera. But the key is, and this is often how it works.
Yeah,
this guy, the guy who's standing for the leadership in this province, his name is Ulrich Sigmund. But he's charismatic, and you get the right mixes of whatever people were feeling grumpy, and they were feeling grumpy there because there was a dreadful attack on some people got driven into by, and it turned out it was someone of different ethnicity, but they was born in Germany, but he killed half a dozen people, murdered them or whatever. But that's what probably more appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still resonating in the area. About migration and the effects and all this. And it's an older population, more from the old conservative East German days, etc. But so that's going to happen. So if they do, and it could change. You don't know how they'll go into the ballot box, and people might come back a bit. But there's other provincial elections coming up in the next few months in Germany. So it's their season, so to call, for that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah, big changes. This could be changes. And the other thing that I do give the AFD some credit for, they don't want to have a war with Russia, which, you know, instead of them all just quite happily all profiting out of drones and dead Ukrainians and dead Russians, it'd be quite nice to have some leadership in Europe and the rest of the world that wants to figure out how to get some peace or how to settle it, you know?
Yeah, AFD, eh?
Yeah.
That's the alternative, that right-wing party, eh?
Yeah. So, but as I say, they're certainly anti-migrant and you know, some racism issues in there. The other thing is in England, well, Britain, you call it, Sir Keir Starmer has decided to leave Parliament. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. You know, and okay, he did some all right stuff, but he had a terrible public relations image. And part of that, in my view, was it wasn't a good look for a human rights lawyer to be telling that it was okay for the IDF to defend itself by withholding food and water and power, et cetera, on the people of Gaza. That that was a particularly low point for him. So he's leaving.
Yeah.
And he's in the it's a strong Labour area in the Holborn St Pancras electorate in London.
Yeah.
But what of note is Zach Polensky said he's interested in running for the Greens, and he's the head of the Green Party. And he's not in Parliament at present, so he's the leader, de facto leader, outside of Parliament. So that'll be interesting. I don't know if you remember, but when the last election, Sir Keir Starmer won it, but there was quite a big, opposition and got lots of votes from Andy Feinstein, and it was called something about the Local People's Coalition, and it was a pro-Palestine, anti-Zionist thing. And they got quite a lot of votes. They got 18,000 votes or whatever. And so it'll be interesting, because if people want to give basically a boot to secure on the way out, give them a boot on the backside, they could vote Greens. Because let's face it, if they vote in another Labour MP, Labour's already got a majority of a couple of hundred MPs, so it's not going to affect what happens. Whereas the Greens might get their message across that, look, this won't really hurt the Andy Burnham bubble, because he's riding high with his being Keir Starmer. So, a bit watch the space.
Yeah, speaking of things of a Zionist nature, Trump cannot deport students for criticising Israel, judge rules. Okay.
Who were, from other countries, was it?
Oh, no, anybody, basically.
Anyway. We can't deport an American citizen, but
we'll get onto something. Okay. Citing the importance of the First Amendment, a federal judge in California says the U.S. government is unconstitutionally signing critics of Israel's war in Gaza and others as part of the Trump administration quest to deport non-citizens who it says disrupt college campuses while expressing their views. Judge Noel Wise, in a ruling on Friday, last Friday, delivered a victory for the student paper at Stanford University, which has said some international students were afraid to speak out because of the deportation threat.
International students.
So that's probably one stinging one up Trump. But unfortunately, I did hear...
Well, a lot of the universities have already succumbed to the Trump threat and have pulled their heads right back about any sort of student protest.
Some haven't. And so there's some legal firms who are also sticking up Trump as well. So, But the other one I heard was the deportation of an Afghanistan person who actually helped the U.S. Army in Afghanistan, doing the Afghanistan stuff.
Okay, yeah.
And a number of Iranians, and they were deported to the Central African Republic for whatever reason.
Okay, recently.
This is recently. And there was one person, he was a military man speaking as a civilian about this particular Afghan person who actually helped them a lot.
Yeah.
And he was highly critical of them, of him being deported.
And why has he been deported?
Didn't say. And there was him and a number of Iranians who were, as I say, deported to the Central African Republic, which is in a state of civil war.
Okay, yes. So not deported back to where they're from, but to another third-party country.
Yeah, okay. but the third-party country is saying that these people can only stay here for 3 months and we will deport them again. And the fear is that the Iranians will go back to Iran.
Yeah.
And the Afghan will go back to the hands of the Taliban.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So very sinister stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not too sure why they've agreed on a horrible place like the Central African Republic with its...
Often it's just do re mi.
I think
there's quite a few deals from countries that some of them we know about and others. You know, the Brits tried to do one to go to Rwanda or something.
Yeah, that was
it.
Yeah.
That failed. But there's other countries, and I think up in, that do get their, you know, people who break the law, some certain laws, mm-hmm. get held in prison in other countries, etc.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's certainly happening, this sort of commodity. Poor countries will take on not just pollution, but they'll also take on others that certain countries don't want, you know?
Yeah, and that's quite, it's quite a corrupt sort of of nation.
Well, it's dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Dangerous. Well, it had a person called Bokassa, and he made himself a self-styled emperor.
Yep.
Of the place, but he was also allegedly supposed to be a cannibal.
Oh, this is in where the
Central African Republic.
Okay, yeah.
It was a former.
What was its old name?
It was part of the big French West African Empire
in the Sahel somewhere, was it?
Yeah, it's towards the centre of Africa. It's,
okay,
but I think it's part of the old French West Africa.
Yeah,
and they had a number of nations in there. Yeah.
Sure,
and they all became independent around about the same time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was that, and the other one that I had was about more humanitarian aid for Cuba.
Yeah.
A group called, I think it's based from Spain, and they go by the name of, and it's probably in the other article. Well, there's two articles about it. Receive Open Arms. Open Arms, it's a group that's sending in aid into Cuba.
Yeah.
So it says in here from Telsio News, Cuba received 7 tons of aid from NGO flotilla Open Arms.
Oh, good. Yeah.
The sailboat Astral, which departed Cancun on the August 29th, carried a cargo of 7 tons of medical supplies and powder milk destined for hospitals in the capital, the Havana. The flotilla named Rumba of Cuba, but they say Open Arms here, is backed by Mexican solidarity organizations and hospital institutions from the Latin American country, with the stated aim of breaking the economic blockade proposed by the USA. Imposed by the USA. Sorry.
Imposed, yeah, not proposed. Yeah. I've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. Open and founder Oscar Kumps addressed the press union arrival, emphasising the significance of Cuba's current situation for the organisation's members. He explained that after the July mission, the team had witnessed firsthand the shortages in hospitals, and rather than concluding the effort and returning home, chose to come back precisely because they now knew exactly what was needed and could take action.
Mm.
Good on them. They delivered Spanish, it's a Spanish NGO, Open Arms, they delivered medical supplies, food and other essentials to Havana hospitals.
Yeah, it's just appalling you know, Cuba has done the right thing and it's been a good, what do you call it, international citizen as far as providing support for disasters, etc. And the America's, through its political influence of, expat Cubans, etc.
Yeah, them.
Are just trying to strangle. And they've done it in other Latin American countries as well, but they've certainly done it with Cuba and they've ratcheted it up.
Just a little bit of background here for NGO Open Arms. It was founded in 2015 during the height of the refugee crisis in the Mediterranean Sea and has since saved more than 70,000 lives. With its trip to Cuba, Open Arms has sought to deliver aid while also highlighting the humanitarian impact of the US blockade or embargo against the island. Good on them. Good on them. And I know that the Chinese and the Russians have been sending aid of certain form.
To the
country. Yeah.
It's just the trouble for the Russians and the Chinese. It's the other side of the world. It's a long way away.
I think the Chinese had something to do with solar energy stuff.
We were talking about that last week.
And Russians provide fuel.
They tried to, but of course, don't forget the Yanks have still got an embargo on it. So there's all sorts of hoops you've got to go through to get anything into Cuba. So it's awful. What's their sin? It's their sin is that they're a socialist country. And of course the Yanks desperately want it to fail. So then they can go to their own a burgeoning socialist movement in America, which we'd call a Labour Light, I guess. But they're trying to show to Americans, look, socialism doesn't work because look at Cuba. But the real reason Cuba's not working well is because of the embargo.
That's always been the case. Me being the person that I am, I would say, hashtag stuff onto certain Facebook pages.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll just put hashtag the old end the embargo.
It's awful to think that the Yanks have held this grudge for how many decades?
Since 1959. So it's been quite some time that they've been, had the sooks in the corner because they got their backsides kicked at the Bay of Pigs.
And just fancy that an out-of-control capitalist system that had largesse of all sorts got chucked out, and of course they've sulked about it ever since.
A cruel dictator was also part of that baggage as well, and Batista.
Because
we know that Ernest Hemingway was in Cuba about that time, the writer, and I think his place still exists there.
I think it does too. As a museum or something.
And I think he had no problems with Castro. I think he actually met him. While he lived there before his health deteriorated. I think his mental health deteriorated.
It's sort of quite frightening because it seems to be, we talked about before we came on here, it's that what's the future of this world is capitalism, capitalism and all that. If we don't get capitalism, unbridled capitalism under check, where does it end up? Families run everything, and everyone else is either bending over, prostrating themselves in front of them or behind them, wherever, and then you have this mass of humanity that's underemployed, has no wealth, etc. What happens? Where does it end?
It's the you have that image of the old Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar. And he had a big image of it built for himself. I know this is biblical, but. And then they had the all these people prostrate except for three young men. And that's probably where things are going to go. There'll be all these people of the world prostrate in front of this big idol of capitalism, and there'll be just a few dissenting voices.
You just sort of wonder. So the only sort of saving may save is. The Mamdani effect in America, that grows, and he's just a light capitalist, not threatening the system. He's basically saying, okay, we've got capitalism, but we have to use it for some common good. And that sums it up.
And that's what he's doing or endeavouring to do, much to the angst of the idiots in the White House. Yeah. Okay. Well, that brings us to a close, and we must say, I hope you get better soon, Mick.
And
you'll catch Free Left Turn on our podcast and on freefm.org.nz.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.